And this is May the 10th, 1954. A first lecture to the sixth unit of the advanced clinical course. This lecture covers the materiel which are to be studied by people coming up to a level of proficiency in Scientology. There's a great deal of materiel, a great many publications, and it might serve your purpose very well to get the relative value of these publications as they exist today. These publications have come out over a period of years and quite often have been shortened up in their importance, quite often have been re-evaluated as to their processes and so forth. And it would serve considerable purpose if we were to simply take up the key publications. We won't discuss all the publications. We'll just take up the key publications today of Scientology and as they apply to an understanding of life and, in particular, auditing. When we go over the tremendous amount of material, one might become a little bewildered. You might say, oh, my, this is an avalanche of words. There couldn't possibly be any common denominator here. And every time Hubbard turns around, he changes his mind. That's real bad because naturally we just get through learning a process and lo and behold, we've got to learn another process. The attitude one could collect finally on something like that would be quite defeatist. Tremendous numbers of processes. Hubbard changes his mind all the time. Well, first publication you had better read is Scientology, A New Science, issue 28G of the Journal of Scientology. All these publications, by the way, and extra copies of them, can be procured from the HAS, 806 North 3rd Street. Just up the block. Scientology, A New Science, is actually, word for word, the first book as such on Scientology. It was written in 1947. Later on, when Dianetics, as a coined subject, was introduced into the public as a general test, this book was published with some changes in it as Dianetics, the original thesis. Well, this was not the original thesis of Dianetics. It was the original thesis on the subject of a new science, and that new science's name from 1938 has been Scientology. An unwieldy word, but it's just my cussedness that we keep it around. All right, we have then in this issue 28G a rundown of what was known in 1947. Here you find actually facsimiles. You find the dynamic. You find practically everything that we are dealing with today. They are in a different form, actually. Scientology, A New Science, doesn't set forth very many workable processes. It's mostly a codification of information. It starts out with its primary axioms. And what do we find here? We find the dynamic principle of existence has survived. Well, now we've amplified that to the curve of action, the cycle of action of the messed universe, and that cycle of action of the messed universe is create, survive, destroy. Survive is the peak of that create, survive, destroy curve. But what is life doing? Mixed up the way it is with something which claims it can't be created, but which must be conserved. Atoms, molecules, they are conserved only, they're never created. And with things which can't be destroyed, atoms and molecules, life, of course, is surviving. That is its main concentration. And we get as late a process as SOP-8D and its wheel as concentrating on nothing but the basic principle of existence as applied to various factors in existence. Quite remarkable. There's very little change. There's just a difference of emphasis over a period of years. We find out what works, and we get a closer codification of it. Your interest in this material is not ever to get more complex, but to get simpler if possible. And so we find, as early as 1947, a great deal of material which we are teaching today still is in existence, and quite interesting. Dramatization, this whole subject of dramatization is covered here. Also the character of engrams, also the tone scale. But dramatization is covered here on page 10 of Scientology New Science, issue 28G, in the Journal of Scientology. And you know, there hasn't been an additional rundown on that, and it frankly has not been mentioned since. It was mentioned in what everyone calls the Book 1, Dianetics, Modern Science, Mental Health. It's not Book 1. This is Book 1. Actually, a simple statement of how a picture goes into action, made here on page 10 of Scientology, A New Science, is the first and really only statement of it, with a single addition, overt acts and motivator sequences. But when we look at overt acts and motivator sequences, we find out why these things come into a dramatization form, which is just an amplification of dramatization itself. Why do people dramatize? Why do people go into stimulus response behavior? Well, you find it back there in 1947. So don't think that we're changing all over the place. We're not. What we're trying to do is get simpler, and out of this mass of data, find more important data. The most important datum would be which, when stated to the case, would clear the case. That's theoretical, isn't it? There isn't such a datum. I'm getting to be a pretty well seasoned campaigner on this. And I can tell you very frankly that there's not such a datum. There are some that are awfully close to it, but the mind is too complex to be covered with a single button. The search for the single button is the dramatization to become the only one. The only one, the only datum, the just oneness of the universe. And you know, you can't get along in this universe with just one. It happens to be a double pole universe. There's always got to be two data. Even when they had God, they had to invent the devil. Two data. Now, there's always more than one datum, so there isn't one button. There are quite a few buttons. The mind is far, far too able to resolve on just one button. That's the only thing wrong with the mind. It is too able. Now, this publication, of course, is available to you for study. And I would study it. I would look through it awfully thoroughly because it's a good bridge from just existence in general into Scientology. It's a good bridge. You can make a good comparison. It doesn't take terribly long to read this. It's written rather simply. It was prepared, by the way, for the medical associations and psychiatric associations of the United States for their understanding of the fact that something could be done about the mind, but they still were in apathy about it. And we're too busy doing nothing, you know, didn't have time. I have several letters concerning this thesis from them, which are very amusing. They thank me very much, and they realize that, you see, I was a member of the Gerontological Society, the U.S. Public Health Service, at the time I wrote this, the Science of Aging, Geriatrics. This was not a wildcat thesis. This wasn't something which just turned up out of the gutter, out of a science fiction magazine. See, this was something from a member in good standing of three of the more important healing organizations of the United States. And it was received as such, but with some horror and despair. Nobody read it. They thought that was very nice, but they didn't have time to read it. Now, it's a very funny thing, but the material mentioned in this has since become, the American Medical Association generally goes in for popularity. It advertises very widely, very broadly. It's paying for a radio broadcast today. It even advertises today cigarettes. Its level of ethic is not what it was once. Once upon a time, it was very high. It's not today. I'm not just making a wisecrack. It's just not. And the organization as a whole refused to take responsibility for something which would be as destructive, could be as destructive as this material. This material in the wrong hands could be dynamite. And you obviously turn around to healing organizations to take over knowledge of this character, particularly when it's put to them by a perfectly well-accredited member of scientific societies and so forth. They didn't take responsibility for it. And that's why you and I are studying this subject. The agencies which should have taken responsibility for this data did not take it. Therefore, there had to come into existence an agency to take responsibility for it. We are that agency, and you who are studying this are becoming part of that agency. You only have to work with this material for quite a little while to find out that it's very dangerous. Oh, very dangerous. And very helpful. You can do a great many things which man's never done before. They've been looking for this material since the days of the ancient Greeks. It isn't just because Hubbard was very smart or something of the sort that it came together. It was rather inevitable that sooner or later enough would be known about the physical universe so that someone versed in mathematics and the physical universe, well studied in these subjects, could enter the humanities and clarify by scientific methodology those humanities. This was the goal of a fellow by the name of Wundt back in the late part of the 19th century, psychology, the 19th century effort to apply scientific methodology to the field of the mind was defeated solely because at that time not enough was known about the physical universe. It's been since that time, actually, that scientific methodology itself has come forward. Today, the composition of the atom and so forth is revealed a great deal. Furthermore, mathematics are far better today than they were. So sooner or later, somebody from the physical sciences naturally would have attacked the field of human behavior and would have come up with the idea that man is not a machine. You see, he would have to know all there was to know about machines in order to know that man was not a machine. You'd have to have a great security about machinery and about your knowledge of the physical universe. If you were hazy about it, you could then guess that maybe man was part of the physical universe. But supposing you knew this subject, the physical universe, mathematics, machines, and you look at this, you'd know immediately where man was erring from the behavior of a machine. To a doctor of medicine, this is an incomprehensible subject. They are not grounded in electronics, in mathematics, in physics, or anything like that. And they can sort of look at machines and think of them as being partially alive. And as a result, they are prone to this error that man is a machine. Man is not a machine. He happens to be running a thing called a biological engine, which runs at 98.6 on carbon and oxygen and so forth. And the engine he's running is an engine. There's no doubt about that. But the single difference is that it is an engine which is being run, and we are interested in what is running that engine. We are not interested in that engine. Medicine is interested in that engine because they don't know anything about engines. It's like the Japanese army officer in the Philippines who took out a switch and beat the Jeep because it wouldn't run. He thought it was alive. Well, the medical doctor today sort of thinks of this engine as something that you'd have to beat to make it go and so forth. He completely bypasses the fact that the engine has an engineer. Now, we're interested in that engineer in Scientology. We're not interested much in that engine. Because if we fix up the engineer, he can always fix up his engine. And unless we let the engineer fix up his engine doesn't stay fixed. So we're into the fellow who runs the engine. Who runs the engine? And that has been the relentless search here for a quarter of a century on my part. Who's running this engine? All I ever found about this engine was that there was something else more important than the engine. Well, it's that which we are studying, and that is the impulse factor. The beingness factor of life itself. What creates life? Well, we find really the entrance point into all of this, as far as anyone would care to put out, the entrance point into this, as far as a public presentation of the material, is Scientology, New Science, issue 28G, Journal of Scientology, 1947. You become well acquainted with that. And the reason you're to become well acquainted with that, I can just tell you, you better become well acquainted with it. The reason you want to become well acquainted is because it is a bridge from public understanding of human behavior over into Scientology. And as soon as you depart from that bridge and get into the rarefied air of thetans and all sorts of creative and destructive mechanisms and behavior patterns and so on, as soon as you can get into a position where you can take somebody who has a bad leg and fix up his leg in a relatively short order and so forth, you have departed from the public ken. You have just left the public far behind, and you're talking in such rarefied air that nobody under the sun, much less your patient, would be able to understand you. Well, this little issue here, Scientology, new science, a good discipline. Read it and understand it as you would study a language with which to talk to the Aborigines. This is all due respect to the people that are around, but this language communicates to them. If you part from that bridge and you go on forward into time and up into higher rarefied stratas, you no longer communicate. You wonder why Scientology communicates poorly as it advances. You see, it's communicating really much more poorly than it communicated once. That's because we know too much, that's all. So you better find out what the public at large can absorb and what it can know, and then talk to them about that. And then just take what information you have and what knowledge you have and go on and operate with your knowledge. You can always say, well, there's much more to know than this. And then give them material such as that in Scientology, a new science. But the second you start talking above this level, you start talking straight over the heads of everybody you're talking to because you have become a specialist. You know your subject. And knowing it, you find it incomprehensible that somebody else wouldn't know this subject. Well, Scientology, a new science, is couched in language and materials and types of examples which communicate. It, by the way, is quite scientific, but it nevertheless is in that bracket. It talks about the analytical mind, the reactive mind. This is very communicable material. All right, so much for that. That really should be your entrance point, and as you go forward, please read that. Please read that. It may or may not be that you will have a quiz on that. But if you wish to continue in communication with the public at large, you would certainly better know knowledge and examples of that level. The next book, which should come to your attention, is a book called Handbook for Preclears, Scientology. Now, this book is an old book. It is not new to you. But the book, nevertheless, contains today the only existing essays on such things as responsibility and is the book of the Chart of Attitudes. You can use the Chart of Attitudes any day you want to on a pre-clear in almost any way you want to, and you can improve his well-being. Now, the Chart of Attitudes, which is in this book, has a very interesting history. It just was after one had searched literally thousands of buttons to find out if they had any effect upon human beings, one found out that just this many buttons, with a couple more, such as win and lose, had effect upon people. In other words, there were about 13 buttons that were quite powerful. And those buttons are in this Chart of Attitudes in the Handbook for Preclears. And we have the top and bottom scale for those buttons. You should know those buttons. You should know them very, very well because they haven't changed today. They are the same buttons. You're still using these buttons. You say, where is this fellow? What is wrong with this fellow? Well, we look at the trust-distrust scale. Trust. That has a lot to do with it. This individual's unable to trust, but he will tell you, well, I can't trust because, you see, if I trusted, why, then somebody would betray me. The trouble with him is he can't trust. And he will still tell you that somebody would betray him if he trusted anyone. It's up to you as an auditor to get him over that bridge. He'll be as well as he can trust people. Do you know he's as safe in this universe as he can trust it? You know the only betrayal that gets into this universe, he enters? He asks to be betrayed. He begs to be betrayed, morning, noon, and night. If you doubt this, try to run betrayal on a preclear sometime. You'll find out that he treats it like a sponge treats water. Betrayal. Wonderful stuff. He's trying to get as distrustful as possible. Well, why is he doing that? That's because he's trying to get individualized. He has to be distrustful in order to be individualized. We don't go into the theory on that any further. Just giving you an example there. This individual's as healthy as he can trust people. Just take it from there and you can make people well. All right. That is to say, he can tolerate as many viewpoints as he can trust. He's as well as he can tolerate a lot of viewpoints. You get somebody who won't exteriorize. The only reason he won't exteriorize is he can't tolerate any other viewpoints than the viewpoints he's got. And that's because he distrusts all of the viewpoints. Simple. The logic behind this material is it's not just built-up specious logic. It's logic that rings the bell only because it applies to every human being you meet. They all react the same way. So you've got the common denominator of behavior. Your greatest liability, by the way, is running out of mystery with regard to man. Man is no longer going to be mysterious to you. It's So you just better find other mysteries to fill that in. You can invent mysteries. You'll find out that a person gets a scarcity of mystery. Now, we look over here in this handbook for pre-clears, talks about control centers. Actually, this is whether or not the thetan is in contact with the left or right-hand side of the brain. Maybe he's in contact only with one half of the body. You get him in contact with both sides of the body, and we've explained control centers. Much more important, the sub-minds, which it talks about here in control centers, have now been discovered. These things are the joint and conduit crossroads, you might say, anchor points of the body. There's an entire structure of the body, which is an electronic structure. Today we can see, weigh, measure, look at the control centers of the body. Where are they and what do they consist of? Well, by the way, one of the methods of exteriorizing somebody is getting just to take a look at them, adjust them, square them around, and all of a sudden the space of the body shakes back to what it should be, and becoming what it should be, an individual can then exteriorize from it, or the body gets well. The body is built on its own space, and that space consists of anchor points. Now, it talks about emotional curves in here, and talks about all sorts of things. But the main thing that it gives you as you go through the book is just a rundown, a review, you might say, of what can be wrong with people. Of course, this book is very, very old, and the processes which it advances are not very modern processes. Nevertheless, all the factors that it covers can be covered by modern processing. You could, in an understanding of modern processing, read this book and derive a great deal of benefit from it. Now, we look over the lists, and we find out that people, when they worked this book as a self-help book, covered the first three or four acts of it and never went further. Why? Actually, the first three or four acts are the most effective acts in the book. If you'd merely covered those acts over and over and over, you'd get a pre-clear. It would probably get well on you. Nobody ever covered them that often. We get over into the back of the book here, and we find out physical ailments and that sort of thing. It's all interesting, but the most interesting part of this book is it contains a list of the definitions, logics, and axioms as they existed in 1952. Now, these, by the way, have not varied. There have been some added to it. And the pre-logics, all the pre-logics have been added to this. And the pre-logic consists of theta can place in space and time objects, locate in space and time objects and energies. And another pre-logic, theta creates space and time in which to locate objects and energies. Another one is theta creates space. And the definition of space is their space is a viewpoint of dimension. And the definition of a static is already in this list of logics and axioms. Those pre-logics are quite important. An individual is as well off as he can create and destroy, not as well off as he can survive. All that is wrong with your pre-clear is that he is surviving. He is surviving because he thinks he cannot survive. He believes it is possible for him not to survive. This is not possible. The individual can no more escape surviving than he could escape falling down if a bullet struck him between the eyes. He must survive. This is one thing that a thetan cannot do otherwise than. He just survives from till the end of time. That's all that's wrong with him. He becomes frantic on the subject. He wants to vary this survival. He wants to change it a little bit. He gets so tired of maintaining the same viewpoints, of going along with the same modus operandi. There's so little action involved in the thing. He's upset about it, so he makes these big dramas out of life and death, and he goes all the way through one life being a hopeless invalid. Why? Randomity. The answers to these things are in these logics and axioms. I would look them over if I were you. They could be brought up to date and will be brought up to date one of these days. But they nevertheless explain quite a few things. These logics and axioms, when heard about in Europe and when translated into two European languages, were conceived to be the greatest single advance of psychotherapy in the last 100 years. I call to your attention, the last 100 years includes Freud. That is not my opinion. That's a European opinion that was foisted off on me in three medical centers. These had preceded me, and I was greeted like a prince. Not because they were true. Not because they led to well people. Not for anything else, but somebody had sat down and codified all psychotherapy and human behavior into a set of logics and axioms. And they could then view it this way. These are not necessarily true, but somebody sooner or later now can just vary these things and look at them and work with them, and gradually the whole pattern will shake into line from these. It gave them this idea. We have made an orderly start at last. They don't care whether they're true or not, see? We've made an orderly start. This is a method of doing it, which will lead us somewhere. And that was enough so that they were rolling out the red carpets every place I showed up over in Europe. That's really the importance of those to the world at large, was psychotherapy in the mind could be organized. And yet, very little credit, and that's due to me. This is just the way an engineer would go about stating his principles when he was trying to take a problem apart, isn't it? I mean, he'd write it up in a very orderly, defined fashion, find everything in the problem there was a definition for, find out where all the definitions were lacking, rack it all up, make it an orderly affair, and then study his problem. See? Science, real science, because science up to the grade, all due respect to the modern physicist who's gone up in mathematics up to as far as calculus, nuclear physics has completely overawed the field of physics, because nuclear physics alone has thrown into question such things as, what's space? What's time? Such things have become terribly important to the nuclear physicist, so he joined hands with philosophy. Physics was natural philosophy once, but it's been a long way from then. So a nuclear physicist going into this problem would, of course, try to make an orderly picture. That orderly picture, and such an orderly picture, is discovered in the Handbook for Preclears. So just look it over as an orderly picture, not as something to be memorized. And get the idea from that. We are actually proceeding along very orderly lines. These lines aren't random. They're very orderly. Now, the next publication you should have anything to do with, not because it's particularly secretive to that. The next publication is issue 14G of the Journal of Scientology, and that covers child Scientology, and it simply discusses psychotherapy of children, and particularly the handling of mock-up processing or creative processes. So this is the only publication of the material in the Journal of Scientology which refers to mock-up processes. Someday, sooner or later, you're going to have to say something about child Scientology. Actually, the most that is written is not in an old book called Child Dianetics. That book was, I don't know it, where it came from, really. It was a staff compilation. I wrote a small introduction on it, and I said a better book could be written, but this happens to be sitting here, and it's all the material that the boys have collected on, and so here it is. Actually, this Child Scientology is based on a lot of experience. There isn't terribly much in it, but it's interesting to you. If you were to talk before teachers and parents, which you will do someday, inevitably, the material that you can use, and they will be very interested in, is right there in Child Scientology, so you should look that over. The most important of the modern publications is the next one, issue 16G of the Journal of Scientology. If you notice, the Journal of Scientology has the editorial policy of putting into printed form the more important works, so that sooner or later, practically everything in this field will be in the form of a journal, which makes it very cheap, which makes it very easy to circulate. That's important, the cheapness of a publication. You can't get anywhere selling $35 books, believe me. Men can't afford them. The idea is to get out information. This is a good, cheap way to get it out. And in this journal of issue 16G, which is a total book, you have, this is Scientology, the science of certainty. We have here the factors. Now, do you know that nothing has varied since the factors were first written? The factors are a little clearer now, and they've been codified into a little bit better processes. But just a relatively short time ago, we came through with universe processing. That's directly out of the factors. So you should know the factors just as such. They're merely a clear statement of the principles back of what we're doing. Now we go through the entire book, This is Scientology, and wind up with a procedure which is not antiquated, which is old SOP 8, Standard Operating Procedure 8. That will continue to be important. 8 will continue to be important as a case classification. Not as a process, but as a case classification. You realize the subsequent processes in their steps, don't classify cases. For instance, SOP-8C is designed to be delivered 100% to an exteriorized individual. It's not designed to exteriorize somebody. May or may not, that's beside the point. Its design is to an exteriorized person. Well, we get the various conditions of beingness which an auditor runs into here in SOP 8. And when we mean step 5, when you hear somebody say he's a step 5, he means he is somebody who is classified in SOP 8 as an SOP 8 step 5. Not an 8C step 5 or an 8D step 5 or something, but an SOP 8 step 5. It means black and interiorized. We get a step 3, it's somebody who can repair his space very readily and rapidly and step out. We get a step 1, that's somebody who can step out easily. In other words, these are conditions of exteriorization. Can he exteriorize or can't he? What level of step is he? If he's totally batty, he would be a step 7, which means psychotic. Now, this is a valuable process if it only contains step 7. Step 7. Step 7 is the earliest and newest that you would try to treat psychosis with. It's the newest and the bestest, even today. Psychosis, contact processing. Well, as we look through all of this material, we find out that there's a tremendous amount here in 16G. Just choosing a paragraph at random, hidden influences are the commonest methods of enforcing attention. Of course, any analytical mind is itself a hidden influence, since as itself it cannot be perceived. Only its energy and objects can be perceived. Thus comes about the worship of the hidden influence, the fear of the hidden influence, the neurosis about hidden influences. I'll explain a lot to somebody. You might even consider God as an individual's idea of the aggregate of all the thetans he has ever confronted running the people he knows. He'd feel that there was a hiddenness there someplace. So he feels that there's something hidden running things around here, so he invents a God to be a unified picture of all the thetans of his friends that he doesn't know about, really. There's a hidden influence at work. Not a lot of data of this character. Then, right with this publication is the revised edition of SOP 8 with its first appendix. And you find that in this appendix we get a few things added in, and its appendix 2 of SOP 8 is very important. Here we have first introduced the concept of certainty. So appendix 2 of SOP 8 is quite important for you to look over. Not to run as a process, but just the idea that the preclear has to be certain of what the preclear says. Now, there's another book, which is almost a companion piece of this, which you should also look over. It sells for $2, VHAS, and that is Scientology 8, 8008. It is in very small print and so on, but it has a lot of material more broadly covered. For instance, this is Scientology, the Science of Certainty, in issue 16G, and Scientology 8, 8008 are both covering more or less the same ground. But 8, 8008 is certainly covering that ground much more broadly. What at one time we had is a doctorate series of lectures had as their basic text Scientology 8, 8008. Well, that book, revised and brought up to date, has more in it of a highly technical nature than any other single publication. It is about the most technical book you care to run into for some time. But you should look that over in conjunction with issue 16G. You find a lot more about universes, you find a lot about spatial definitions, and so on. Of course, we're getting into an awful mass of material here when we've gone into this degree. But what, in essence, is important about this material? It's actually just various viewpoints of a viewpoint called man. It's various ways of talking about this. Sooner or later, this material boils down to you and goes click. You could suddenly see Scientology as a method of increasing the tolerance of beings. And once you've increased their tolerance, which would be their tolerance of accepting viewpoints, you would, of course, bring them into a condition where they could accept any viewpoint under the sun. And being capable of accepting that viewpoint, they would then, and therefore, be able, henceforward, to tolerate that viewpoint without resisting it, and so they would no longer get trapped. The only way they can be trapped is by resisting viewpoints. If we could just, as we go through this material, orient this and orient that, we suddenly get a denominator which satisfies as to your concept, and then we have communicated, and then thee and me know what we are talking about. There's tremendous amounts of material that you could cover. Oh, there's much more material than I'm giving you here, but it isn't necessary to cover that to a great degree. Now we get issue 24G, a very important issue of the Journal of Scientology. It contains SOP 8C, the rehabilitation of the human spirit. Now, this is the first good, thorough hash over of the subject of exteriorization that's been published. And 8C is different than the other SOP8s in that it has 8 steps. All the others have 7 steps. There's an additional step in there called duplication. Now, just confidentially, you are today reworking 8C. You're just doing variations on 8C in the advanced clinical courses and in other courses. And you find out that if you know 8C real well and know the names of its steps real well, and if you know opening procedure and use it real well, very few cases will defy you. And the few which do defy you, we have the remedy for in viewpoint straight wire. 8C is quite important. You want to know that. That isn't the kind of a process that you would sit there with it on your lap, reading it to the break layer. Don't ever do that anyhow. It spoils his confidence in your knowledge. Get a picture on the wall, if you have to, that sits behind the preclear's head, which illuminates and shows you the steps like they read television screens, but never sit with a book or a piece of paper in your hand auditing a preclear. Just never. It just destroys his confidence utterly. He knows that you don't know what you're doing. 8C is very easy to remember. And for an auditor who is in the business, he certainly should know it by heart. Opening procedure right straight on down the line. You see, you don't have to know it word for word. Just know it step by step. And you know all the component parts of the various steps. So you should know that and know it quite well. All right. What else do we get into here? Now you will find that there are certain papers which exist for the use of somebody studying Scientology. And these little papers are incorporated into a book. They contain many, many things rather than just one. But they are the various parts of clinical course material and other such data. And they start out more or less with the data sheet of the advanced course. All this material, as I say, is incorporated into a little booklet, just mimeographed. And you'll find that the data sheet starts covering right from scratch and goes through for 4 closely typewritten pages. And that it embraces most of the things you're struggling with. And when we've got through reading all this enormous amount of material, which I've just been giving you, we find out that here it all sits on 4 mimeographed pages. Quite a relief, isn't it? The one thing which isn't on these 4 mimeographed pages, however, is an expansive review of human behavior and how does it fit and how much do you understand of it. That's not on these pages. All there are some crisp definitions. Space is a viewpoint of dimension. Now, we find that there's a different scale, for instance, the no to sex scale. That's an interesting scale. Because it's the condensation of attention which results in energy. And it's plotted against the past and the future. And that no to sex scale, that's right there. You better know that, because process after process gets leveled out against that. Here's communication in its most basic theory. How you handle non-exteriorized cases. And here's a whole procedure called advanced course procedure, which is not necessarily the procedure used in advanced course, but there it is. And here we have, as we go on through these papers, we have various little techniques to make space and to remedy havingness and so on, which are quite interesting. And the most interesting of these are a change of space list. And this change of space list is compiled out of what to audit. Change of space. It's all the important places in the messed universe where the individual or any individual has smeared in. All the important impact points of this entire universe are on this list. And it's used for exteriorized pre-clears, and you run change of space on them, and you get them into remarkably good shape if you do. And you have to remember while you're doing that to remedy the havingness, of course, and so forth. But here is the list of places. That's all it is. It's just a bare list of these places. Well, nobody expects you to remember that list. There's just too many of them. And here also we find a piece of paper on the subject of 8-0. And this is about the most brief statement on what 8-0 is that you could imagine. Because 8-0 is not very solidly codified. It's to bring up the abilities of a thetan up along certain lines to make an operating thetan. Unfortunately, there's so much work to be done along up to the line of clear, and so much understanding and so much association, continued association with the human race and so forth, it's darn seldom that an auditor gets up to a good, solid appreciation of 8-0. He still mucks around in the lower brackets. And I have a little bit of difficulty getting opportunities to cover 8-0. I'm so often explaining lower bracket material. I'm trying to pick up understanding on that. Actually, somebody who comes out to a line of theta clear, though, ought to just more or less recognize what the abilities of an operating thetan would be and go ahead and create them on a pre-clear. I mean, it's very easy. Nevertheless, there is that list in existence there. Now, the most important papers in this little handful of papers are viewpoint straight wire and be, have, and do straight wire. Oh, that's real important. And that is a list which you should know by heart. By heart. Again, it deteriorates the confidence of somebody to have you read to them. But what is this viewpoint straight wire but a codification of the note of sex scale? And once you take a look at the formula behind it, you know exactly what the questions are and what the key of those questions are. But this one you had better know. And the reason you had better know this one is because you're going to use it, and use it, and use it, and use it. And it's terribly simple, and there isn't very much to it. But it, of all other things, of all the processes, it is the only process, except certain exteriorization processes, certain processes which run when exteriorized. It's the only process which directly brings about a greater tolerance of viewpoints in the messed universe. All those de-intensify the danger in viewpoints so that an individual can tolerate them. This technique alone brings up an individual's tolerance of viewpoints, no matter how ugly, no matter how beautiful, no matter how dangerous, no matter how debased. He gets a tolerance of viewpoints by doing what? By running viewpoint straight wire and be, have, and do straight wire. And along with that, there's another process known as SOP8D. Now, there's SOP8DA, DB, DC, and so forth, which is a wheel. And it's simply the dynamic principle of existences survive. And all it does is apply this directly to a case, and it is a process which immediately and directly addresses the problem of interwoven and intertwined universes, and immediately addresses the problem of intermixed universes and separates them out. It is quite a process. It's a very long process. It's a very arduous process. It's very hard to run on some preclears and so forth. And yet it is a process which separates out universes. And if anybody is ever going to get out of the messed universe, they're going to have to be able to tolerate every viewpoint in the messed universe, and quite in addition to that, be able to get out of any universe they get into. And that power and ability is delivered into their hands with 8D and its wheel. Now you will also have, and there will be listed here, there's the SOP8H. H is for havingness. It takes the same wheel pattern of SOP8D, which is the note of sex scale, takes the same wheel pattern and applies it to the remedy of havingness and tolerance of space. And it just takes all those subjects, sex, eating, symbols, thinking, effort, emotion, looking, and knowing, and remedies the havingness on each one of them in order. It takes, for instance, the parts of the body and the goals of an individual, and it just remedies the havingness on it. And it is a good slug process. It'll turn off more headaches and straighten out more preclears by being very unspecific. You wouldn't have to know a thing about the preclear to run this. You'd just fish around till each one of these things were acceptable to him. You'd remedy the havingness on, and your individual would start coming up in tone quite rapidly and readily. That process is a simple process, but again, it requires an enormous amount of auditor patience. Back on 8D again, there's a process in there that covers ownership. The sub-zero processes of the tone scale are covered there in that process. Now, all these processes of later day, which I will list for you in a moment, have a tremendous effectiveness. And so they bring about what? A tremendous communication lag. They change the communication level of the preclear so arduously that it is not uncommon for either one of the basic questions of step 4 of 8D to produce a 15-minute to 3-hour communication lag. In other words, your preclear could be sitting there for 3 hours without replying to you. Not boiling off. Let's not get off on the boil-off. That would mean he was unconscious. This person is sitting there trying to reply to you for 3 hours. He's just trying to reply. He's conscious every moment of the time. He is aware every moment of the time that he can't quite answer your question. He's not in a foggy state. He's just in a bludgeon state in which he's still thinking. He's still thinking. He's still acting. He knows he's sitting there. He thinks it might be taking a long time, but it might be taking a short time, too, as far as he's concerned. But he will sit there in front of the auditor for anywhere between 15 minutes and 3 hours on some of these questions. Can you imagine somebody sitting there for 3 hours, completely alert and yet speechless, unable to find one place? Well, the effectiveness of the process is, of course, the length of communication lag which it could produce. And these sure produce communication lags. So they require, and so I'll just give you that as an example, that requires then a considerable auditor tolerance, doesn't it? An auditor really has to know what's going on. Supposing you just turned off the list of these things to a bunch of nitwits who hadn't been trained in any kind of an auditor's code or anything of the sort, and you just handed it into their hands, and they went around happily saying, well, we're auditors now. And, all right, here we go. Now, question 82, see? And the preclear says, gog, glug, communication lag setting in. Well, why don't you answer me? What's the matter with you? Can't you think of one? Well, I'll tell you one right now. I know what you did. Let's evaluate for him. There we go. I don't know. It'd probably be kinder to take a shotgun to the preclear. Shoot him in the left foot. It's just grim. So you see, the violence of the process is very great in that. If you told somebody out here on the street that you could ask them a question that they would not only not be able to answer immediately, but which would knock them sort of groggy, you could just ask them a question which would knock them groggy, they'd say, you're crazy. They'd know that couldn't happen to them. And yet you could immediately ask them one of these questions from recent processes, and they would immediately go groggy. Here's interesting material in terms of human behavior. You have exceeded human behavior. You're operating so far out of the range of human behavior today that it's quite remarkable that many auditors care to go on and do anything for human beings, tell you the truth. They just operate way on. Yeah, but it's an interesting game. And basically, it is not a despised and horrible thing to help your fellow man. We'll go into that in a moment. I'll finish off these publications. Now, here is an old book, Scientology 880. It's quite an important old book. contains a lot of interesting data in it. Data about flows and things like that that'll never be covered otherwise. And quite in addition to that, there is self-analysis and any other rewrite of self-analysis which may be in existence. Workbooks, you might say, which you can hand to your preclear and he can take home and do. That's a great auditor assist. Get some preclear out of your hair, tired of auditing him or something, give him a workbook. Or he needs lots more auditing than he can pay for, which is quite routine. And so you give him a workbook to let him slug it out. Way back when, I get a couple of preclears, and neither one of them were able to stand on their individual feet, and I would push them, two patients, and I'd push them at each other and have them read things back and forth to each other and take notes and so forth. And I've even trained them to run engrams on each other that I knew needed to be run out. Keep them in the other room, you might say. Keep them in an auditing room close by and open a microphone on them occasionally and see how it was going. Then go in, finish it off, knock out the session, and save myself an enormous amount of work. That was in the days when you'd sometimes run into 9-hour runouts. Well, you can do a lot by giving a preclear something or giving a couple of preclears. Let's say you give a couple of preclears that are coming along too slowly to suit you, give them a workbook and ask one of them to work it on the other one. Take three preclears and work a triangular runaround. In other words, there's lots of ways to handle this material, but such books exist, and they are for your use. Now, let's go into a very fast resume of what are modern processes. And what processes are we using, and what processes are you expected to know? Well, you're expected to know the following processes. The running of engrams. You're expected to know how to run an engram. A chain of locks. Expected to be able to run a chain of locks. You're supposed to know how to run a secondary engram. Incidentally, how to do this is covered clear back there in Scientology and New Science. Run a secondary. Somebody's husband has just died and she is in the doldrums and you could punch around for a long time, but you're dealing with a present time, immediate problem. The easiest thing to do is just get the first moment that they were told their husband was dead and just run it from there and just run it out as an incident and spill the tears all over the place. It works on such a high majority of the people that you run into that there's no reason why you shouldn't use it occasionally as a process. But it is a basic process, and although you don't use it ordinarily or generally at all, you'd better know it just as a process. Now, the next process that you should know very well above that is SOP-8. You should know that for its academic value rather than its definite value. Big jump there, isn't there? From running a secondary to SOP-8, but that's true enough. That's about the order of magnitude. Now we get up to the next process, and these are in chronological order as they were offered rather than order of value. The next process that you would come up against and should know, and know very, very thoroughly, is what we were doing with advanced group procedure. Now, this incidentally covers 8D. Advanced group procedure. It has such things in it as beingness processing, universe processing, the grand tour, change of space, so on. All of these are little processes that are there, they fit in the right places, but they are not a lot of processes. I can go into them quite rapidly with you. 8C in its entirety. You should know how to run an 8C in its entirety. You should occasionally run 8C on a preclear. Very useful. 8C is part of advanced group procedure, and it's the first part of it. Then you get into universe processing, and then you get into beingness processing, and then you get into what's known as a grand tour, and then you get change of space processes. And then you get into avalanches, the remedies of havingness. That's all really there is. You don't have to take notes on this because you will have the material in your hands. Now, those are quite important as processes. Let's take now an individual process distinct from these others, and that process is 8D. And its wheel. That is, say, all the variations of 8D. You know 8D is terribly interesting. It has opening procedure, step 1, step 2, step 3. This never varies, and only one thing varies.
is step four. And there's really only one basic question in all of the D's, just to show you how simple this is, and that's, where would so-and-so be safe? Let's find another place where he would be safe, another place where he'd be safe, another place where he'd be safe. Now let's find some places where he would find you safe, and some more places where he would find you safe. In other words, just those two sides of the bracket, and we just wear it out. That's getting rid of Papa's universe. We just get rid of Papa's universe until it's gone, and that's that. Papa won't bother a preclear anymore. This procedure, however, is overawed by a process which is far more important than any other single process, and that is viewpoint straight wire combined with be, have, and do straight wire. And a part of viewpoint straight wire is viewpoint ARC straight wire. And this is simply a small number of questions which are asked over and over and over, a very simple process. So simple that you are not going to give it the benefit of the doubt when you first start processing with it. But it depends on being, aside from a grand tour and change of space, it depends for its value on the fact that it is the only process which brings about a wide and great tolerance of viewpoint in this universe. Therefore, it processes directly toward freedom from the mesh universe. It processes straight toward freedom. And you just keep chopping along with it and chopping along with it, and the fellow's getting better and better and freer and freer. Now, in addition to that process, there is SOP8H. And it's same model as SOP8D. They're the same process. Except that step four and the wheel have a slightly different goal. You just remedy havingness on every portion of existence which is important to remedy havingness on. When I say remedy havingness, I mean just that. You give the guy as much mass as he has lost in these departments. This is in the interest of turning on full memory of remedying all scarcities. You just take it to pieces. Step four of 8H is varied all the way around, just varied over and over and over, just different things that you remedy havingness on. That's all. Now, all of these processes are very easy processes, extremely easy. But an auditor gets into difficulty with them occasionally. Why? Because he doesn't follow some of the basic rules of the game. And these are to keep a two-way communication with your preclear. Two-way communication, not just one way. Two, that he doesn't monitor his processing against the communication lag change of the preclear. He monitors his processing against the changing communication lags of the preclear. How long does it take the preclear to answer? And he changes his process every time he is not producing a change in communication lag. That's rudimentary, isn't it? And the other one is a general following of the auditor's code with great stress on the two shuns. You shun invalidation and you shun evaluation. Shun them madly. And so you run the auditor's code with the idea of two-way communication, watching the communication lag of your preclear, and believe me, you produce results. The simpler processes are the better processes. You'd better learn how to get simple with a process, not learn how to get complex. Today, you don't have to know a damn thing about your preclear making well. You don't have to know anything about it. You're processing the mechanics of beingness. Now, just because you're processing the mechanics of beingness, don't think that you have immediately disposed of all beingness. You are senior to anything you can understand. That means immediately that you're senior to nothing. You're senior to something. You can understand something, you can understand nothing. Therefore, you, in essence, aren't either one, something or nothing, are you? Now, you can understand all the mechanics of beingness which we have to hand. Therefore, you are greater than all these mechanics of beingness. So let's make it our first job in this course to get greater than all these mechanics by knowing these mechanics, because you are greater than anything you know. So let's know what we're doing. Okay.